The number of kids diagnosed with mental and emotional illnesses today is off the charts. Even scarier is the number of kids who are currently on some type of mood-altering prescription drugs. Today on Licensed to Parent, we'll be looking at the mental health field in a way that could alter the way you look at the way you parent your children. So stay tuned. You're listening to Licensed to Parent. Well, hello, and welcome to the Licensed to Parent broadcast. I'm Rich Rosel, and our host, as always, is Trace Embry. And Trace, we've got a full plate today, and that full plate starts with my introducing our special guest who's in the studio with us today. He has been on the program before. His name is John Roseman. John has worked with families, with children and parents since 1971 in the field of family psychology. He earned his master's in psychology from Western Illinois University. He worked as a psychologist in Illinois and in North Carolina, directing several mental health programs for children. And for several years, he was in full-time practice as a family psychologist in Gastonia, North Carolina. Now, at some point, John decided to leave all of that glamour and become a full-time speaker and writer. In fact, he's been writing about parenting issues for a number of years. His work is currently syndicated in about 225 newspapers nationwide. He has also written 11 best-selling parenting books and spends much of his spare time, if you want to call it that, speaking as well. And of equal importance to us on this program, Trace, is the fact that John Roseman is and this is professional accomplishments aside, he is a man who's been married to the same woman for nearly 46 years. He's the father of two successful adults and the grandfather of seven grandchildren. And that is why we want him on our parenting program today.
Absolutely. John, it is an honor to have you here on campus of Shepherd Till and in the studio with us here on Licensed to Parent, out here in the middle of a horse pasture in Northeast Georgia. Thank you for being with us, brother.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me, Trace and Rich.
And by the way, before we jump in here, we have to reveal a few interesting items about the good doctor.
Okay.
First of all, this young man, and when he was very young, like had just been born, he was almost ushered into the world by the famous actor Charlton Heston.
Uh-oh.
Who came to visit his parents, who he happened to be friends with his parents, in the hospital, and I understand that he gave you your first toy.
Yeah, and it was a little rubber elephant, which was prophetic.
And do you still have this toy?
No, I do
not.
That'd
be worth something.
I was about to say, was given to you by Charlton Heston.
Yeah. No, I don't. I don't still have it. I wish I did, but my mother, I have my mother's the notes that she kept in what was then called a baby book, and she writes that Charlton and Lydia dropped by this morning to see Mr. Bobo.
And which we presume was your nickname.
What was me. I yes. was the Bobo in utero, and I became instantly, when they saw that I was a male, I became Mr. Bobo.
Mr. Bobo. In utero.
Yeah. Well, one other thing we wanted to mention. I just mentioned this because, you know, when we have guests on the program, and these guests are addressing issues that we talk about a lot, about, you know, rock and roll, living this type of lifestyle versus that type of lifestyle. Mm-hmm. John Roseman is a man who has lived multiple types of lifestyles. In fact, you were a rock and roll guitarist and lead singer for quite a few years.
Yeah, I don't know that I've lived multiple lifestyles, but I've
just
I've
the same one over and over.
Well, you know, I've been a rebel, and I was a rebel without a cause as when I was a kid.
Now he's got a cause.
And now I have a
cause.
There
you go.
And, but, you know, I was a lefty. I was a campus radical. I was a, I played in a working rock and roll band for 7 years with all of the accessories appertaining thereto. Liberal, Democrat, atheist, the whole nine yards, yeah.
And your band opened for REO Speedwagon a
twice.
Couple of times. Wow.
Twice, yeah.
For those who would like to date themselves in the same way that we are. Great,
exactly.
Great band from back in the 70s. Anyway, those are just a few fun facts. We don't get to do this often because most of our guests never let us know about these fun
That's
facts.
Right.
So we just thought we'd bring them up so that you can see that John speaks with legitimacy when he talks about issues of teenage years and whatnot.
Sounds like this is a man who's experienced a measure of success in everything he's pursued, and certainly a tremendous measure of success in the area of helping parents parent their kids. You know, John, a lot of parents today are using the services of a counselor or a therapist, a psychologist, a psychiatrist to help them with their kids. Can you help flesh out the differences in all these? Maybe, you know, where does a social worker come into the equation?
Well, I think they all counsel, do therapy, whatever they call it that they do, from the same basic paradigm, which is a psychological paradigm, which is a, you know, we talk a lot about worldviews in the Christian community.
Right.
And the worldview of psychology is completely different from a Christian worldview.
And that's where it all starts, isn't it?
Yeah, it all starts there. And I believe that it is potentially toxic for Christians to go see psychologists because of that reason, because the psychological worldview is so completely different, mm-hmm. 180 degrees different. There is no overlap. John MacArthur, in his book, An Introduction to Christian Counseling, and other people have echoed the same thing, says that there is no such thing as a Christian psychologist. It's an oxymoron. Mm. You cannot reconcile in any way, shape, or form a Christian worldview with a psychological worldview. And I talk a lot about one's parent view, which is consists of two things, basically. Your concept of who your child is, number one, and number two, your understanding of your responsibilities toward your child. And the psychological parent view has it that children are fundamentally good.
No, that's a big problem.
That is a huge problem. Mm-hmm. It's a huge problem for today's parents because they believe that.
Yeah.
And therefore, they're completely knocked off balance when their children begin to do bad things. They don't know how to deal with it. And that the child begins to do bad things because he is corrupted by societal and familial and parental influence that whether intentionally or not is dysfunctional and pollutes his original immaculate self and heads him off in the wrong direction. One of the things I say to people is that, you know, that no psychological paradigm explains the behavior of toddlers. A toddler raised in a family in which there's never been a discussion of violence within his hearing. He's never seen even cartoon violence. Denied a cookie at 5:30 in the afternoon by his mother, falls on the floor, begins having a tantrum. His mother goes to pick him up, bring him to her shoulder, comfort him. He hauls off while both of her hands are occupied. 22-month-old who's never heard or seen an act of violence, heard about seeing an act of violence, hauls off and with malice aforethought attacks the face.
Well, I think it was
of that individual who's given him more love and attention than anybody else for the last 20. No psychological paradigm will explain that.
Yeah. All you got to do is go to a child care facility and watch Junior crack another kid over the head to get his cookie.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was Augustine who said, a child doesn't kill you for lack of intent. A child doesn't kill you for lack of ability.
It's right.
Kind of an infant. Because they are wired, you know, to sin, basically. We're born into it. But a lot of psychology is 180 degrees out, but is there something that we can do as far as chewing up the wheat and spitting out the sticks?
No.
No?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it's all very deceptive.
Tell us how you really feel, John.
Well, I think it's all very deceptive. It may sound good. It may have appeal. It may tickle the ears, as Paul says, but I don't think that really and truly it has any validity whatsoever.
And this is coming from a psychologist.
Yeah, I'm licensed. I'm licensed to practice psychology by the North Carolina Psychology Board.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you reconcile that in yourself?
Well, I don't practice psychology. I'm licensed to practice psychology. I don't practice it.
Just because you have the license, you don't do it.
No, I don't do it, but I keep the license so that I can go around the country and I can say, I am a psychologist and here's what I have to say about psychology.
Okay.
And because I'm a psychologist, people tend to take what I'm saying with a great deal more credibility than would otherwise be the case.
Would you say that when you got into psychology, though, back in the 70s, were you of a psychological mindset at that point?
Absolutely, Rich.
Okay, so been a shift then.
Right. I bought into it hook, line, and sinker, which is good. I needed to in order to I had to, and I was a very, very good student. My professors have subsequently told me that I was the best student they've ever had in 50 years of having the program in operation at Western.
But you got to know what the enemy's doing.
Well, and this is the thing. I was very, very good at grasping psychological principles and regurgitating them, and I believed them. I was a true believer. But it rather than regurgitating it with sort of a pragmatic attitude about it, I was regurgitating it because I really believed in it. I really thought this was, you know, Abraham Maslow, the founder basically of humanistic psychology, he is quoted as having said, and he wrote it, so he did say it, that if the world is ever going to be saved, psychology will be its savior. And this is the way these people believed. They really did have a messianic salvation attitude.
Idolatry, almost.
In a very real sense. And I began to realize all this before I was a Christian. I mean, I didn't realize it in theological terms, of course. I didn't put it into a biblical context and begin to parse the differences. But I began to be very, very uneasy about what my profession was saying about children and how to raise them properly back in the late 1970s. And I believe God has brought me on a journey from graduate school to the place I am today. And I believe he's given me an assignment and a responsibility and a ministry. And this is what I do as I go around the country, is I tell people psychology, that paradigm, that worldview, which we embraced in the raising of children in the 1960s and early 70s, has created more problems for the American family than psychologists even know how to solve.
Mm-hmm.
I told an audience in Athens, Georgia, that you cannot expect that a person who has completely bought into the paradigm that has created the problem is going to be able to help you solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible. And these people, this is why all they're doing these days, Trace and Rich, is testing, diagnosing, and medicating. It's all they're doing.
When the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do?
Precisely.
When a parent of a young kid or even a teenager begins to act out beyond the parent's perceived ability to control the child, what should be a parent's first course of action? Who should they turn to?
I don't deny that talking to someone can be helpful, getting another person's point of view, going to someone else for advice concerning issues of living. There is no way to deny that that can be helpful. There is no evidence, however, and this is a research-based statement that I'm about to make. People with PhDs give better advice than people with high school educations. When research has been done on people who have what we call psychological problems, problems with issues of living, and they don't know the educational level of the person that they are receiving the counseling from, they rate people with high school educations as well as they rate, as highly as they rate people with PhDs. So why are we licensing people? Why are we investing so much credibility in the capital letters after people's names?
Yeah.
And I say this as a person who's got impressive capital letters after his name. Why are we investing credibility in this when there is no science that says that this credibility can be justified? Can capital letters and licensing be justified for a brain surgeon? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a engineer who is responsible for making sure that a 25-story building doesn't collapse? Yes. But psychology, mental health, counseling, therapy, whatever you call it, no.
And I think the key word out of the equation is empiricals.
That's right.
But Rich, you had something to say.
Well, I was going to say we need to take a break.
Oh, okay.
We've not done so yet. When we come back, though, one of the things that we have now successfully done is pulled the rug out from under every parent's desire to find that secret solution to the problem that they're having with their child. And so I'd like us, when we come back, to deal with the parenting issue. That's what this program is about, Licensed to Parent. And help parents understand how to discern the type of counsel they may need. We don't live in the same society that we used to, and grandma may not even be anywhere close by. But I think there's a lot of wisdom in turning to our elders, and especially those who are well-grounded in the faith. But we'll talk about that when we come back. Our guest today is a psychologist who doesn't claim that. His name is John Roseman. He's an author of about 11 books on the subject of parenting. His columns are syndicated in over 200 newspapers nationwide, and we are delighted to have him as our guest in the studio today. Trace Embry, our host. I'm Rich Rosl, and we'll be back with more Licensed to Parent after this. Teen rebellion, depression, addiction, rage, cutting, and suicide are destroying our families today. But there is a way out. Shepherd's Hill Academy offers a 12-month, Christ-centered, nonprofit residential program where kids are being transformed with a biblical worldview and often medication-free. Christian apologist Ravi Zacharias is just one of many Christian leaders who understands what's happening at Shepherd's Hill Academy.
It really is such an honor to come alongside Shepherd's Hill Ministries and Licensed to Parent to rescue those who have been seduced along the way. I cannot gainsay how important this is, and to get behind a ministry like this, one will find the rewards to be extremely powerful in changing society.
Get the help you need at Shepherd's Hill Academy. Go to helpmytroubledteen.org. helpmytroubledteen.org. It's difficult to see the light at the end of the tunnel when you're face to face with a teenager who argues with you at every turn. Maybe you and your teen can't talk to one another about anything without it getting complicated. For nearly two decades, Shepherd's Hill Academy has been bringing healing to teens and families from around the world. Up until now, that help has come through its residential treatment facility in North Georgia. But now, your family can benefit from that experience at home through Shepherd's Hill Family Coaching, designed to help you discern God's will for your family, build good communication skills, deal with defiant children, and more. Our family coaching team will work with you by phone, in your home, at work, even while you're on the road, to help your family develop a game plan to succeed. Sign up for Shepherd's Hill Family Coaching today by visiting licensedtoparent.org. Live the family life your family was designed for. Click on the family coaching banner at licensedtoparent.org. Welcome back to Licensed to Parent with Trace Embry. I'm Rich Rosl, and we're speaking once again today with rock and roll guitarist John Roseman. I just thought we need to pull that out again.
You know.
John Roseman is a licensed psychologist in the state of North Carolina, but has given that up for a better faith, which is Christianity, and is bringing some great insight to us today. And John, right before the break, I had mentioned that we've sort of pulled the rug out from under what most people would say are the viable solutions for treating issues like depression or ADHD or these sorts of things by saying that there's not a lot of validity in what the field of psychology and psychiatry are able to offer. So what do parents do if you're facing a child who's got what might be classified as a mental disorder or just an emotional problem? Mm-hmm. Where do they turn? How do they discern who's best to provide the advice they need?
All right. Well, first of all, I need to clarify that there is the problems are real. People do get depressed. People,
sure.
Children do exhibit the behaviors associated with and listed in the DSM as diagnostic of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, et cetera, et cetera. So the problems are real. The question is there credible evidence that the only people who are qualified to deal with these problems are people with capital letters after their names? And no, there is no credible evidence to that. I believe the best person for parents to go to, let's narrow this down to parents, when they're having problems with a child, is a person much older than themselves who has acquired knowledge and wisdom through the living of a fully valid life and has gone through the trial and error in his or her own life that is necessary to go through in order to reach that point in life. And it doesn't matter whether that person has a PhD or a high school education. It really doesn't matter. The primary ingredient is trust, that you trust that that individual is going to be able to give you competent guidance. Mm-hmm. You know, I tell people who come to see me, because I still do some degree of counseling, just keep my feet in the whole thing, my hands wet, you know, whatever you want to call it. I tell people that you're not going to hear me talk like a psychologist. You know, I'm not going to use psychological language. I'm not going to talk about a diagnosis. I don't test. I don't diagnose. I don't do treatment. What I'm giving you is advice based on two sources, the Bible and my own personal experience filtered through that biblical worldview. And you know, that's what I have to offer. And I believe that, for example, not meaning to toot my own horn, but I believe, much better direction to people operating from within the context of a Christian worldview than I ever gave to people from within the context of a psychological worldview. Therefore, in a very, very real sense, the capital letters after my name are irrelevant to the advice mm-hmm. that I'm giving to people.
But now, do people who listen to that advice have to buy into a biblical worldview to begin with? What if they think the children are naturally good while you're giving them this advice, and that there are issues of self-esteem and things like that? Do you first have to qualify your foundation by which you're building your counsel on before they'll accept that? Or is there something wired in each human being that just realizes that what you're telling them is true?
I think we recognize valid advice, helpful advice at an intuitive level. I mean, I was sitting with some people the other day talking about their young adult daughter who's just gone off the deep end and out into deep space. And I said, are you beating yourself up over this? Oh, yeah, you bet, John. We're just, you know, beating ourselves half to death over this, wondering what it is we did wrong. And I said, well, you know, the Freudian myth is that parenting produces the child. And until Freud, no one believed this. It's very important that we understand that this idea that parenting has this deterministic influence over the direction that a child's life takes mm-hmm. is only 100 years old. Mm-hmm. And that the much more time-tested idea is free will. And I was talking to people who were not overtly Christian. They may go to church. I didn't ever ask their faith background. But I think people can understand this. You don't have to talk about these concepts and reference constantly the Bible in order to get these things across. Right. God says in his word that we have pretty much all we need to know written on our hearts. And I believe that whether you are a Christian or not, you have the same things written on your heart I have on mine.
Yeah, we talked about that yesterday.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that when you, even if you are an atheist, when you hear the truth, you recognize the truth for what it is.
You know, Adrian Rogers, I've shared this before, but I don't know if you're familiar with Adrian Rogers. He tells a story of a Memphis trucking outfit that makes all their applicants fill out a questionnaire. One of the questions is, are you an atheist? And 90% of the people who check, yes, I'm an atheist, the polygraph proves them wrong. Isn't that interesting?
Well, everybody has a God. I wrote a song once. I write Christian rock today. Christian rock, not praise.
Now, that might be an oxymoron
there.
Yeah,
but, you know, and I said, and the refrain is, man loves his idols.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
You know, that's the refrain. Man loves his idols. So even if you're an atheist, you have a God that you worship.
No doubt about it. You see the term sin returning to the mental health equation in our lifetime?
No. Psychologists think that the idea of sin is primitive, benighted, ignorant, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, and yet from a Christian perspective, all of the symptoms of diagnostic, of psychiatric disorder listed in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual qualify as sin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Paul says, you know, if you believe in Christ, there's no reason for you to be anxious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, if you're anxious, then it follows you really aren't putting all of your faith in Christ. And that is, from a Christian perspective, a theological perspective, that is sin.
That's just too simple for the guys with the letters behind
their
name.
Yeah, it is. It's way too simple. It's way too logical.
Listen, we're losing time here. I think you've agreed to come back for a second program. But before we go, I just have to ask you I think I know your feelings about medications in general, but if there was a medication that was proven to steer people away from homosexuality, would you promote it?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't promote it because I wouldn't want to give a person who is in a state of sin the impression, the wrong impression, that their sinfulness was due to biological conditions.
So as an analogy, a guy who wanted to build muscles, you wouldn't give him steroids. You just say, you know what, you do this naturally.
Well, I guess that's, yeah, I'll accept that as an adequate analogy for the moment, yeah, sure.
Best I could do off the top of my head, John. Okay, come on, give me a break.
That was good enough.
Well, our guest today has been John Roseman. He's been involved in the field of family psychology since 1971, though presently spends more of his time speaking and writing about parenting issues. His work is syndicated in approximately 225 newspapers nationwide. John has been a guest on the program in the past, and as Trace just alluded to, he'll be a guest in the future because we're going to have him back to continue our conversation. John, real quickly before we go, I know you guys have just launched a new website, parentguru.com. Would you like to tell us about that? Or how can people best get in touch with you?
Well, they can get in touch with me by going to my personal website, which is johnrosemond.com. Or they can go to parentguru.com. Parent Guru is being redesigned behind the proverbial cyber curtain or whatever people call it. We're going to relaunch that website within about a month. But Parent Guru is simply a parent support website. It's very unique on the web. There is nothing like it. We have a group of people, including myself, who are constantly every day answering questions submitted by parents. No question ever submitted has gone unanswered. Mm-hmm. So it's a very unique website. It's a parent support and resource website that we're very excited about. We're just going to add features to it as it goes along, video, audio, webinars, et cetera, et cetera.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's cool.
John, thank you so much for being with
us. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Yep, and Trace, thank you for your time today as well. The program you've been listening to is Licensed to Parent. It's the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a residential treatment program for teens in trouble located just north of Atlanta, Georgia. I'm Rich Rosel, and we would love to have you join us not only here on the radio program, but also join us in support of this outreach. If you would visit us on the web at licensedtoparent.org, in the upper right-hand corner of that website, you will find a donate button. Your tax-deductible contributions go a long way to help us minister to teens in trouble here at Shepherd's Hill Academy, but also minister to their parents, the ones who need to be retrained and retooled to be the parents that God wants them to be. So again, any tax-deductible contribution that you make would be greatly appreciated, and we would enjoy having you as a partner in this radio outreach. On behalf of Trace Embry, I'm Rich Rosel. Thanks so much for joining us, and we hope you'll join us again next time.
And remember, folks, if you don't train your children, somebody else will. God bless you. See you next time.